Support for Access Utah comes from Crump Brothers Artisan Bread at 300 South and 300 West in Logan. Now with new hours, open Monday through Saturday 7 until 3 and Saturday 8 until 3, offering a changing menu of French breakfast pastries with local seasonal fruits and serving lunch sandwiches.
Welcome to Access Utah. We're going to be talking about two proposed water pipelines. The program today, in the second half, it's the Green River Pipeline, which would transport water from Flaming Gorge Reservoir to the Denver area. And our guests then will include Fort Collins businessman Aaron Million, who's proposing that project, and Zach Frankel, Executive Director of Utah Rivers Council, which has opposed the pipeline. We begin our look at pipelines with the Lake Powell Pipeline in this half of the program. That is a pipeline which would transport water some 140 miles from Lake Powell to Sand Hollow Reservoir in Hurricane in Washington County. Then another 35 miles of pipe to convey water to Cedar City. And some 100,000 acre feet of water would also be diverted to Kane County. So this would affect those three counties. Proponents, of course, say that they need this water for increased growth. Opponents have various objections. And we're going to talk about this project on this part of the program with our guest, Ron Johnson, manager of the Washington County Water Conservancy District. Mr. Johnson, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's Thompson, not Johnson.
Oh, I'm very sorry. Thompson.
No problem.
I'll make that that change. Mr. Thompson, and with Christy Newfer, who is Administrator for Citizens for Dixie's Future. Welcome to you.
Good morning. Thanks.
Let me start with you, Mr. Thompson. Maybe give us the scope of what you believe the growth will be and why you believe we need this water.
Well, you know, Washington County, over the past 40 years, has been probably the fastest-growing county in Utah, and we continue to grow, even though we've had an economic downturn. In Washington County today, about 47% of our water goes to commercial institutional uses, and 38% to permanent residential, and 14% to second homes. And all of our projections and the state's projections indicate we'll continue to grow to a community of well over $500,000 people by 2050. We think we have a water supply in the Virgin River to take us about 270,000 people. So we're going to have a large gap that has to be filled in there, and Lake Powell is the source we think will fill that.
Are there any other alternatives in your view? Is this pipeline absolutely essential?
I don't think there's a lot of future in this county if you don't have it, but that's ultimately I suppose that people have to decide that. But if we continue to grow at between 3% and 5%, we've actually grown about 6.2% over the past 40 years, then there's really no other options that I see that's realistically available. Mm-hmm. And certainly not from an environmental perspective.
Christy Newfer with Citizens for Dixie's Future, what is your view of this proposed pipeline?
Our view is that the pipeline is being pushed based on outdated and flawed population numbers. The projections for population that Mr. Thompson speaks of were estimated back in 2008 before the recession. And while we have historically had high growth rates, we were in that booming portion where we were coming from a small town to a bigger town that has services and college, university, those types of things available. The 6% growth rate is just not realistic. We saw between 2009 and 2010 0.5% of a growth rate. So as the town does continue to grow, we want to be able to support that growth, and our argument would be that right now is the time to conserve water and not obligate our future generations to a drowning debt that will impact the cost of living and the quality of life here in southern Utah.
I want to get Mr. Thompson's view of your taking issue with those growth projections, but let's just stipulate, Ms. Newfer, that there's going to be growth, maybe not 6%, but there's going to be growth. What are the sources of water then that will be able to accommodate that growth?
The first source is conservation, and because if Washington County is actually the West's most wasteful water user. We use far more than any of our neighbors, and there's been lots of explanations for this, but the truth is that we can do better. We live on the edge of the Mojave Desert, and it is not responsible or being good stewards of our resources to water acres of lawn, into waste in this manner. And what we would suggest is the most effective way to conserve is to price water at the actual cost and make sure that we stop water subsidies that allow people to not feel the true impacts of their wasteful water use.
Mr. Thompson, I will ask you about the population growth figures, but if we just stipulate that it's a lower figure than 6%, could that be taken care of through conservation and other measures, do you think?
No, you just can't take care of it with conservation alone. I know what, you know, Christy has this dialogue, but let's just talk about what really is happening in Washington County. Our water per capita use has dropped from 326 gallons per capita in 2000 to 239 here. In Utah, that per capita includes all the water that's used for commercial, institutional, industrial, residential, and second homes, and then divided by those people who live in it permanently. Today, our residential population is using less than 100 gallons per capita per day. There's about 100 gallons per capita per day being used by commercial, institutional, industrial. That's taking care of nearly 6 million visitors a year. And then we have roughly 50 gallons per capita per day that's being used by the second homes of people who don't live here permanently. I don't think you can find any place where the permanent residential population is doing a lot better than our community. And the 239 gallons we're using today is comparable with any community given the breakup of our community and the breakdown of commercial and institutional uses.
Before I get a response from Ms. Newfer, the population figure, you're pretty solid with the 6%?
No, I don't think. I think we actually are going to slow down. We have slowed down. We have not gone to 0.5%, as Christy indicates. They're selling today between 350 and 400 homes a month in Washington County and have done for the last year and a half, so certainly to say there's no growth going on, just not factually correct. We're back to not all of those are new homes. There's about 1,000 new homes being built a year, and the rest are removing the inventory, which we were grossly overbuilt in 2007 and 6 and 7.
Ms. Newfer, back to the conservation. That's the main thing you believe these counties can do, and that will be sufficient?
Well, what I would say is that is the first thing that we should do before engaging in bringing water in from 138 miles away. The first step should be conservation and making sure that our resources are going, our local resources go as far as they possibly could. There are other planned water projects that the district showed in their draft study reports that came out last March. We definitely encourage looking at those. I think there's actually also some additional water supplies that aren't being counted. Agricultural conversion accounts for a very low percentage of future water supplies, but if the county is to grow to the level of 500,000 people or even 270,000 people, we have a huge amount of protected lands in our county. So developable land is not the entire county. It doesn't take in all the acreage. So you will see agriculture moving out. Our group doesn't necessarily want to see all the agriculture move out, but we know that as development encroaches out in the Washington field areas, you see that agricultural water no longer being used for fields. So there's other water supplies that are not being accounted for as well.
And I'll get a response from Mr. Thompson. If you've just joined us, we're talking about the proposed Lake Powell pipeline, which would take water from Lake Powell and run it to Washington County, also to Iron County, and Kane County would be involved as well. Proponents say this is needed for growth. It's going to be happening. Opponents raise various objections. We're debating this in this part of the program. Later on, we'll debate the proposed Green River pipeline. You're welcome to join this conversation if you'd like. The number is 1-800-826-1495. 1-800-826-1495. Or if you'd like to email us, you can get an email through from our website, upr.org. On the front page, you'll see the story on our subject today, and there's an email link right there. Our guests are Ron Thompson, manager of the Washington County Water Conservancy District, and Christy Newfer, administrator of Citizens for Dixie's Future. Mr. Thompson, I'm sure you've heard some of the other objections, environmental, budget. I'm interested maybe starting with those with water rights concerns. Do you believe you have The state has sufficient water rights, and those have been cleared for this pipeline?
Yeah, we have adequate water rights, and I think if you asked anyone who understands the Colorado River that Utah clearly has a water right that is a very high priority that will come into the Lake Powell area to meet the needs of this project. I guess you ultimately have to decide if Utah has this block of water, should we use it to help and develop and protect our economy and the future generations here? Should we send it down the river to the Gulf of Mexico, which some of Christie's supporters think we ought to do?
Before we get a response from Ms. Newfer, I want to ask parenthetically here, Mr. Thompson, I'm sure you've been hearing about this proposed Green River pipeline, which, of course, is upstream. Is that debate going to affect this pipeline?
Well, I don't think it will, but anytime you have two states competing for the same resource, there's going to have to be some serious discussion. I think what's troubling with the Flaming Gorge Colorado proposal is that it's taking water out of a tributary primarily made up in Utah and Wyoming and not taking water out of any of the watershed of Colorado. And while there's certainly plenty of Colorado's water rights that they have on the west side of the Rockies, there seems to be no plans to take that water, but to come up and take water that's primarily assumed to be available to Utah and Wyoming and take that around. I think that's going to be an issue.
Christy Newfer, before I have you express some of your other concerns, which I'm sure you have, your group has, regarding the Lake Powell Pipeline, what about the economic growth? The economy, we're all concerned about that. Will setting aside this pipeline affect economic growth?
Well, it's actually one of our biggest concerns also with this pipeline is that you, by setting aside Colorado River water for this future growth, we're essentially building a community on a false promise of water. It's widely known that the Colorado River is currently overallocated, and with the future effects of climate change, some of these effects were revealed in the recent Bureau of Reclamation report. We're going to see flows to the Colorado River further diminishing in the future, and although we have that right, it's just one river, and many people have rights on this river. And if the water is not there, it's just not there. So we're looking at building a multi-billion dollar project on a promise of water that may or may not be available in the future. So our argument, again, would be get this community prepared now. While we have 138,000 residents, as a community, let's start to conserve, let's implement model landscape ordinances, let's price water for the true fair market value, and help us as a community learn to conserve before we get to 500,000 people and end up not having this water available potentially at some point in the future.
Mr. Thompson, I want to get your reaction to see if your conservancy district agrees with this. The Water Task Force at the legislature is recommending that at least the full legislature consider earmarking 15% of future growth in state sales tax revenues for this fund, which would finance Lake Powell Pipeline. Are you in favor of that?
Well, certainly I'm in favor of the state looking at funding critical water infrastructure. And I want to go back to what Christy said a little bit about the Colorado River. Over the last, since Lake Powell was created, there's been an average of 12.6 million acre-foot of water coming into Lake Powell. We have a legal obligation to deliver 8.3 million acre-foot to the lower basin. We have, on average, delivered over 9.6 million acre-foot. So when she says there's not enough water, all the studies I've seen say, well, they could be at normal or slightly below normal with climate change. It seems to me that when you look at the change, there's certainly going to be adequate water. The Bureau of Rec model for Lake Powell clearly indicates that there may be a risk of maybe one-half of 1%, that there may be some year we wouldn't get 100% allocation, but that is not significant. If we were to have the kind of climate change she suggests, what do we think the Virgin River would look like, who is like as compared to Colorado River, maybe a BB in a boxcar?
I wonder, though, on the philosophical point, disagreeing over the figures, but it's like roads, you know, if you build them, they will come, is what developers often say. At a certain point, there's going to be a limit, isn't there?
Well, I think, but you know, as populations, as you become more dense and you start building up instead of just out, then you start getting much more water conservation than you see in traditional Western communities. So I think there is gains to be made in water conservation. Mm-hmm. I think, frankly, over the long haul, the restraining to growth here is going to be available, developable land, not available water supply.
Ms. Neuper, I know that your group has some objections to this proposed earmarking of sales tax revenues to fund the Lake Powell pipeline. What are those objections?
We have several objections to that. First of all, we feel that earmarks basically tie the hands of legislators to make the important decisions of the day in the future. Last year, we saw a 30% earmark for transportation, and an additional 15% would be terribly binding to legislators in the future. And second of all, again, we don't feel that this project is necessary, and the Water District, which is an unelected body of officials, is essentially binding Washington County residents and future generations to repaying its multi-billion dollar debt. And we have not had adequate explanation of exactly how this is going to be repaid. We've been told impact fees, but those were dependent on 6% growth, which we are clearly not seeing. There's also the possibility of a water surcharge, and then there's also property taxes. So the citizens that will be repaying this debt have not been given an adequate explanation of how it will impact them financially in the future.
Mr. Thompson, I'm guessing you disagree.
Oh, of course. You know, I just think about water development historically in Washington County. And first, let me say the state has had a long history of helping finance these projects. They have always been repaid their principal investment with interest. All of our projects where we've had state participation, they've repaid over time. And so it's not like many state programs where they put money into them and never get a return of their investment. In every case that I've seen, every dollar has been returned to the state that they have invested in the water infrastructure with interest. And in addition, the jobs and growth that that's created and the economy it's supported has helped finance other state projects. You know, I often think as I listen to Christy, when we build our first project, Quail Creek, we had about $120 million of taxable value and financed a $30 million project. Today we have a little over $10 billion of taxable value, and Washington County's portion of the Lake Powell Pipeline is somewhere slightly less than $800 million. Certainly our economic our economy today will support a much bigger project than it was able to support in 1983. So I really don't agree. I think you'll see that the growth will pay for this, that we expect the new growth to pay for all of our water projects. We don't build into our base water rate the cost of capital projects for future growth. We expect future growth to pay for that.
And we're coming to the end of our time. Let me start with Mr. Thompson for a final statement. Specifically, how urgent is this? By when do you feel we need to have the pipeline in place?
Well, certainly when we were growing at 10%, we thought it would be earlier than today. I really think, as we see the new state projections out here in another several months, we'll see that we'll have a little more room and perhaps won't have to have the dire need that we thought we'd have by early 2020. I suspect that'll move that curve out to maybe 2024, 2025. As with any project this large, you still have to go through the environmental process, and we're moving along in that, not nearly as quick as we'd like, but certainly through this traditional process. As soon as that happens and we get our final record decision, then we would expect to move into design and ultimately build this in phases so it'll come online as the need occurs. I really don't think if you don't build this project, there is very little future for long-term in Washington County. I remember, because Washington County only had about 6,000 people back in the 1960s, and almost every child who was educated here had to leave to find a job. I'd hate to see us return to that kind of a stagnant economy where there's no future for those children who are raised here and would like to return, and without a viable economy, that really leaves no future here for those generations.
And for this segment, we'll give the last word to Christy Neuper with the Citizens for Dixie's Future. What most important thing you could say to object to the pipeline?
Well, I would just first address the when you question Mr. Thompson about the repayment, again, we heard more guarantees. And if there's anything that the recent recession should have taught us, it's that things aren't always going to go as they have in the past. We may see different things. We've seen that in our banking industries, and we've seen it on Wall Street, and we can see it in water projects as well. Second, I would argue that, again, the citizens, the taxpayers deserve to know exactly how this is going to be repaid, and the state needs to be well aware of that before they sign on to subsidizing this water use. And I would argue that in fiscally conservative Utah, that we ought to be looking at open market economics and fair market value of water, pricing it, and stopping the subsidies that allow Washington County to continue to waste water. In doing that, I believe that this county can grow. It can continue to thrive in the desert. We want to see that happen, but we want to do it in a responsible way that allows us to be good stewards of our resources. And like Mr. Thompson mentioned, we did grow from 6,000 people. I'm a lifelong resident of St. George, and I've seen this population increase. But when I was born here, there was one stoplight in town. Now we have interchanges, and we have services. We have a world-class hospital. We have a college about to become a university. There's a point of diminishing returns. You see this in corporations and in manufacturing. You see rapid levels of growth. And then once a company or a city or a town reaches a certain level, you will see those levels level off. And we experienced this just recently at the Economic Summit here in Southern Utah. The economist from Workforce Services, Leisha Langston, said, you will not see these past levels of growth returning at any point soon. So it's time to reassess and reevaluate. And if we can find a way to live within our means and with our natural resources, being good stewards of those resources and avoiding going into a huge amount of debt that burdens future generations, that's going to benefit current generations and future generations and give us a better quality of life in Southern Utah.
We'll leave it there. We'll be readdressing this subject, I'm sure. It'll be at the legislature and it'll be ongoing. Our thanks to Ron Thompson, manager of the Washington County Water Conservancy District. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you.
And Christy Newfer, administrator of Citizens for Dixie's Future. Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up following a brief break, we're going to continue discussion of Lake Powell Pipeline and the conservation issues. See how this will affect Iron County. We'll talk with Brent Hunter, board chairman of the Central Iron County Water Conservancy District, later in the program. In our last segment, we'll be talking about the proposed Green River Pipeline, which would transport water from Flaming Gorge Reservoir to the Denver area. Our guests then will include Fort Collins businessman Aaron Million and Zach Frankel, executive director of Utah Rivers Council. Stay tuned, and the number to call if you'd like to join the program is 800-826-1495. Back after brief break.
This is Jennifer Pemberton, website manager at Utah Public Radio, inviting you to visit the new upr.org. Our new website features dynamic news stories from all over the state, daily posts for Access Utah, interactive program schedules, and easy online listening. Go now to upr.org, your favorite public radio website for Utah news and UPR programs.
Thanks for staying with us. I'm Tom Williams. We're talking about proposed water transportation, specifically a couple of proposed water pipelines. Coming up, a discussion of the Green River Pipeline from Flaming Gorge to the Denver area. Right now, we continue discussion of the Lake Powell Pipeline and see how this might affect Iron County. Iron County is proposed to be included in this. The major part of the pipeline would run from Lake Powell into Washington County, and then it would be extended another 35 miles into the Cedar City area. Kane County would also benefit with some water. And we bring in Brent Hunter, who is board chairman of the Central Iron County Water Conservancy District. Thanks for joining us today. I believe we have on the line now. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. I can. I know that this has been a topic of hot discussion in Iron County. In fact, former manager resigned, saying that he didn't believe that without water acquisition projects, you expect the district to be required to enact aggressive water conservation measures. There's been some debate about water conservation. First of all, I wonder what the effect will be. Do you believe you'll need that Lake Powell water for future growth in Iron County?
Well, we feel like we would surely like to have it. We feel down here that maybe the cost is just almost insurmountable because of the extra expense to bring it into Cedar City. We have stayed in the Lake Powell pipeline program, but we're beginning to have questions to whether we can afford it.
Money worries. Does this have to do with the proposed earmarking of tax revenues, or is this just Iron County's portion of paying for the pipeline?
I think that's the latter is the thing we're concerned about. Mm-hmm. You see, essentially, the infrastructure cost, the building of the pipeline cost, will cost us almost twice as much as it will the people in Washington County. And so we think that that puts us at a disadvantage in comparison with them, and we just we really hate to not have the water. We feel like we need the water, or that we will need the water down the road, but trying to figure out how to pay for it seems to be a very steep hill to climb.
So maybe the board feels that that money is not worth the 20,000 acre feet that would be coming in from the pipeline.
Well, that's the community discussion we're having at the present time.
Yeah. I wonder if I could, if you're willing to comment on the resignation of the former manager, Scott Wilson.
Well, Scott, bottom line, he got a better job.
Oh, okay. in the paper, it appeared that he was resigning for principal.
Well, he did. He has been a strong proponent of the pipeline, and he didn't feel, and he, you know, that's his opinion, is that we're going to have to increase our conservation efforts, which is probably true for everyone in the state, and he didn't want to be involved in that kind of an effort. He would rather build pipelines and things like that, but I think the bottom line really was that he got a job that was paying a lot better than we were paying him, so we wish him well.
I wonder if you get your comments in reaction to Doug Halls. He's founder of the Citizens Group, Iron County Alliance of Taxpayers. He says, in his opinion, Water Conservancy District hasn't done enough about conservation.
Well, he's a interesting fellow, and we appreciate his input, and that's his that's part of his initiative, and it's forward thinking, I think, and we have done some studies in connection with our research about the Lake Powell pipeline of various efforts that can be made to increase our conservation efforts, and we intend to press forward with some of those things.
If the board decides not to go with the Lake Powell pipeline, where will the future sources of growth come to, or of water, rather, to accommodate the future growth?
Well, we have in our valley, for example, Cedar City is using about 9 or 10,000 acre-feet of water a year. In our valley, we have agricultural water that uses probably 25,000 acre-feet. So we do have that resource available if we want to convert agricultural into municipal and industrial use. I'm a farmer, so I hope we don't do that, because I think that the value of water for its agricultural purposes may be increasing, at least it looks like that, in the near future. So we have that resource. We do have some things that we can do, we think, to conserve some of the water. One of the initiatives we're considering at the moment is to try to save a lot of water that we waste in our spring runoff out of Coal Creek, which is the creek that comes down out of the mouth of the canyon at Cedar City. We don't have a reservoir in our canyon because the sediment load in that creek is so high that if you build a dam, it would be full of dirt before it ever was paved for. Mm-hmm. But we do see a lot of our water come down in the springtime that we're not able to make good use of, and we're trying to develop a system where we can take that water and clean it up and inject it into our gravel alluvial fan and recharge our underground. We think we can save some water that way.
Finally, I wonder if you're willing to speculate, predict, do you think that the Central Iron Water Conservancy District will sign on or not to the Lake Powell pipeline?
Well, we feel like we're still in as far as we're concerned at the moment, but the state is wants to know whether we're in or out, and I think our position as a district is to defer to the cities, Cedar City and Enix City, who are the major contributors to our district, and see exactly what they want us to do. We don't want to make a decision on our own. Cedar City and Enix City will have to make the major decisions in that regard.
We'll be keeping a close eye on this. I'm sure it'll be a topic of discussion in Iron County as well. We've been talking this part of the program with the board chairman of the Central Iron County Water Conservancy District, Brent Hunter. Mr. Hunter, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, sir.
Coming up following a break, Ed Casilia's commentary. We're going to be talking about another pipeline that's being considered. This would transport water from Flaming Gorge Reservoir to the Denver area. And our guests will include Fort Collins businessman Aaron Million, who's proposing the WICO Power and Water Project, and Zach Frankel, Executive Director of Utah Rivers Council, which is opposed to the pipeline. That's coming up following a break.
I'd like to be under the sea.
It was a clear and sunny day. Hardly anybody was on the beach as my wife and I sat staring out at the Sea of Cortez. The water was calm, and as the sun beat down, it reflected like a million little diamonds sparkling on the surface. "There's a poof," Kara said at one point. "Look, oh, there's another one over there." Indeed, there were a couple of poofs spewing out of the water, maybe a quarter of a mile from shore. The poofs were spouts from two sets of whales circling a huge ball of baitfish. There was a humpback and its calf on one side, a gray whale and its calf on the other. Each poof was usually followed by a splash as whales broke the surface and headed nose down into the sea, displaying their magnificent flukes in one final show before disappearing. Our whales are back. They call the Sea of Cortez the world's aquarium. Located in the Gulf of California, between Baja California, the second largest peninsula in the world, and mainland Mexico, it is home to more than 5,000 species, from rare birds to whale sharks and the giant leatherback sea turtles. From mid-December until late April, the Gulf is teeming with migrating humpback and gray whales that travel down the west coast to the warmer, more temperate waters here to give birth to their young calves. There are some lagoons on the Pacific side of the peninsula that are noted as whale nurseries, but most eventually find their way around the Cape and into the Sea of Cortez. Whale calves are born with a thin layer of blubber, which means they must be nurtured in warmer waters. Normally, your first sign of a whale is its spout as it releases the air from its massive lungs. The exhaled air is warm, and what is usually coming out of the whale is comparable to the steam you see when you exhale on a cold, wintry day, except some of these spouts can go up as far as 30 feet into the air. Then you will see the whale roll onto the surface. If you're lucky, you will see one dancing in the waves. The humpbacks and grays are endangered species, the Asian whaling fleet responsible for most of the carnage. The commercial longline fishing outfits are also responsible for the demise as many whales get tangled in the nylon nets each year and die. As large and powerful as these whales are, they can still be impacted by slight changes in water temperature, oxygen levels, and salinity. Even though they are at the upper end of the food chain, these environmental nuances are a threat. We often go to a particular beach here where the whale watching has been quite successful. And as the sun-drenched turistas are wasting away in Margaritaville, Karen and I spend hours peering out into the ocean looking for that elusive poof that gives way to seeing these graceful, docile creatures. It's a constant reminder of how beautiful, yet fragile, nature can be. This is Ed Casilia for Utah Public Radio.
Over the years you have been hunted by the men who threw harpoons, and in the long run we will kill you just to feed the pets we raise. Put the flowers in your vase and make the lipstick for your face.
You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We continue our discussion of water pipelines. We've talked about the Lake Powell pipeline. We now turn to a proposed Green River pipeline, which would transport water from Flaming Gorge Reservoir to the Denver area. Our guests in this part of the program include Fort Collins businessman Aaron Million, who's proposing the WICO Power and Water Project. Mr. Million, thanks for joining us.
Tom, thank you. I appreciate it.
And we have with us as well Zach Frankel, Executive Director of Utah Rivers Council. A group is among groups opposed to the pipeline. Let me start with Mr. Million. Why this pipeline? It's fairly ambitious. Would run some 500 miles from Flaming Gorge over three states, mostly Wyoming, and into Colorado, into the Front Range, the Denver area. Why the pipeline?
Well, you know, I think it gets down to the Utah governor's comments regarding the use of water in the upper basin, particularly Utah, and now Wyoming and Colorado and New Mexico. This is a this is a basin-wide discussion, frankly. The reality of the situation is that since 1922, under the Colorado River Compact, the upper basin, the four upper basin states, over-delivered to the lower basin states, California, Nevada, and Arizona, every 10-year running average since 1922. Those surpluses, those available waters, should be used and put to beneficial use in the upper basin. With that said, there's huge recreational environmental benefits in the river system, the Green, the Colorado, and all the rivers throughout the West. So we've looked at the Flaming Gorge, Green River hydrology. We've looked at the baseline record of decision, which quantified all the needs for rafting, recreation, fly fishing, trout fisheries, endangered species, et cetera, and really just considering some of the surpluses above those baseline needs to help other areas in the region, in this case, Wyoming and Colorado.
How would the water be used?
The water would be piped, much like the Lake Powell project, underground pipeline from Flaming Gorge, which is a 3.8 million acre foot reservoir that was authorized for use for Colorado, Wyoming, and Utah, New Mexico under the Upper Basin Compact and the Colorado River Storage Project. And it would carry some of Wyoming's water for Wyoming users within that state, and would carry Colorado's water for Colorado users, in this case on the Front Range of Colorado.
Do officials there, what is there? Are they supporting it? Do they believe they need this water?
Well, it's interesting. The Colorado Water Conservation Board, which is really kind of the stewards of the water from a policy standpoint in the state, just recently unanimously voted to provide funding to look at this project from their lens. And, I think it underpins the fact that there are potential surpluses there that can be used to help other areas also. And so the state is looking at it from their perspective. With that said, unlike Utah, unlike Wyoming, the state of Colorado cannot own and develop water rights. They can hold in-stream flows, but in Colorado, Utah is strictly a private right. The governor, Governor Hickenlooper, has been briefed previously. He has not weighed in on the proposal yet. I think he's awaiting the outcome of the CWCB analysis. The environmental community, which frankly I consider myself part of, even though I was raised on a ranch, part of my life at Green River, Utah, part of my life in Boulder, is interested in not even seeing an analysis done, which is unfortunate because that has served the environmental interests exceedingly well, as it should, in the protection of species throughout the country.
And before I bring in Mr. Frankel, his group, among others, that has objections to the pipeline, the financing for this, how would this be paid for?
You know, this is a private-public project, and PPP projects are being done all over the country, all over the world, as citizens are extremely constrained financially. The tax base has continued to erode. The economy is arguably in a very tough position. So we would bring private ingenuity, capital to the table to get this project designed and built, with the eventual users being, to a large degree, municipalities, but also agricultural interests and, frankly, environmental interests. Hmm.
By the way, you're welcome to join this conversation on the proposed pipeline from Flaming Gorge to the Denver area. If you have a question or comment, we'd love to hear from you at 1-800-826-1495, 1-800-826-1495, or you can email us from our main page. There's a story on this under Access Utah, and the email link is right there. That'll come straight to us in the studio, or 1-800-826-1495. Let me bring in Zach Frankel, Executive Director of Utah Rivers Council. I know your group is opposed to this proposed pipeline. What are your major concerns?
Well, there's a number of concerns, and I think we need to set the record straight. First of all, the real purpose of this project is really just to make money. It's not really a water project where the recipients are in dire need of this water, and that's why the purpose of the project keeps changing on a month-to-month basis. Sometimes it's for municipal use. Sometimes it's for oil and gas, for fracking use. It's basically for whatever use that can be used to justify this extremely expensive and destructive project. And I think you earlier asked a question about where Wyoming's at, and that was greatly sidestepped. There is a list of interveners, of institutions that are opposed, that is really breathtaking. The United States Forest Service, the City of Green River in Wyoming, the Upper Yampa Water Conservation District, Sweetwater County, Wyoming, Wyoming Game and Fish Department, the Coalition of Local Governments, which is a long list, includes the Sweetwater County Commission, the Sweetwater County Conservation District, the Little Snake River Conservation District, Lincoln County Commission, the list goes on and on. Even the governor, the city of Laramie of Wyoming, and the governor of Wyoming have all expressed unanimity in opposing this project. So to claim that Wyoming is somehow going to benefit from this project, you know, there's a big difference between perception and reality. The reality of the situation is that all of those institutions, elected officials, and viable and credible fish and game institutions, whether they're departments or whether they're agencies, are all opposed to this project because it's a bad idea. This is classic wasteful government spending, and it's privately financed for private profiteering, but it's going to cost state and federal taxpayers out of these three states and federal taxpayers across the country millions and millions of dollars to have to waste their time addressing this ridiculous project. We're only at the very, very first stage. This is the preliminary permit application to the federal agency called FERC, Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. And these preliminary permit applications are given away like candy. They're given to pretty much anyone who walks in off the street. This project is so unviable. There are physical, legal, and financial barriers to this project that will preclude it from ever happening. But we all have to address it and deal with it as if it's a real viable project. It's really just an investment strategy for private gain.
I'll give you a chance, ample chance, Mr. Million, to rebut those points. Before I go to you, Mr. Frankel, I want to get your response to Mr. Million's assertion that his disappointment that environmental groups don't even want an analysis done. He says that why don't we do an analysis of impacts?
Well, basically what he's proposing is to spend tens of millions of dollars of state and federal taxpayer dollars to look at what we already know are the impacts. You know, I'm not some crazy environmentalist. I'm a state and federal taxpayer. I am a supporter of farms. I myself buy 10 tons of alfalfa every single year. I am a tourist. Okay, so I'm all of these things. I'm a member of the public, and I'm opposed to this, just like all these other credible institutions are, for all of these different reasons. So I think it's a fallacy. It's 19th century thinking to try and frame this as environmentalists versus rationality. This is U.S. taxpayers versus a bad idea.
Mr. Million, I'm sure there are several points there that you would like to rebut.
Yeah, Jack, I think your comments are disingenuous and flawed on almost every level, with exception of one or two. With due respect, the project has stayed the same since day one. It was looking at the surpluses above all the needs that the environmental community signed off on a previous record of decision on Flaming Gorge and the Green River system as a collaborative win. Basically re-regulating Flaming Gorge Reservoir to help endangered species downstream, as it should. That's a great policy objective. But there are baseline needs that were met in that entire record of decision, and we're looking at some of the surpluses above all the needs that are already being met under the record of decision. It was only done 3 or 4 years ago on the Green River. The project has stayed the exact same since day one. The only thing that has changed, frankly, is that the alternative energy project, because the net elevation drop from Flaming Gorge to the Front Range of Colorado is several thousand feet, has moved the EIS, which we were in the middle of, frankly, with the Corps of Engineers, and we actually had to force the Corps in to get them to take the EIS because they thought the project was, frankly, so benign. But as the hydropower, the alternative energy, which is a policy objective in this country, and it should be, became a more prominent piece of the project, it became evident that FERC, Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, much like FERC is running the project at Lake Powell, was the appropriate federal agency and required by law to be the EIS lead. With the comment about taxpayer dollars, not a single cent. This has all been a private. I was a grad student at Colorado State University Environmental Economics. This has been funded by myself since day one. We have not asked for a single cent.
I think that's really the point.
Let me finish. From any of the federal coffers, from any state government, that we will reimburse all the federal agencies for their work under cost reimbursement agreements. The governor of Wyoming has weighed in against the project. Other entities within Wyoming, users, Cheyenne, Lake Heady Irrigation District, and others, have sent in letters of interest for a water supply from the project, as have agricultural districts, municipalities, and others that are in extremely short water scenarios in Colorado.
And I think if I could just come in here,
will help.
I know we're running out of time.
Base. With all respect intended, your background in agriculture, 10 tons of alfalfa once feed three mother cows down at Robber's Roost.
Well, actually, that's a lot, and it's actually more like 100 tons. So you don't know enough about me, and it's not germane to the dialogue. Let me come in here.
Let me have Mr. Frankel just a very focused way. Let me have you. I know you wanted to react to the taxpayer issue.
Thank you very much. And I think, again, it's not about the environmental community. First of all, again, Mr. Million is certainly entitled to make money, and he's certainly entitled to his opinion. He's not entitled to his own set of facts, however. And if you don't, the listener shouldn't have to believe me. Why don't they listen to Governor Mead, the current Wyoming governor, and his comments on this, in which he talks about everything. In one of the most important points here is Mr. Million said that there was a finding of facts and that the Corps found that there was no serious impacts. That's just factually inaccurate. And Governor Mead has said that in a letter dated July 15, 2011. Governor Mead writes, "The Corps advised the state of Wyoming and other cooperating entities that the Corps was withdrawing this application and terminating the environmental studies. The Corps indicated it was withdrawing the application because the Corps considered the permit application incomplete." Okay, so there's never been any real presentation of what is being proposed beyond this concept. It's presented as if it is some kind of secure thing, as if it is all really needed and the project is essential. Governor Mead goes on to write, "The applicant has not shown that it has secured customers to buy the water, has not determined how much appropriated undeveloped water is left to the Colorado under the compact, or whether the state of Colorado wishes to grant a portion of that water to the proponent. There are many entities inside the state of Colorado that don't want to see its share of the Colorado River Basin used in this manner." I think, Mr. Million, you know, my hat's off to you for trying to make money on this. That's a bold adventure, and as you said yourself, you know, you've put your own money into that. And as an entrepreneur, I think that's exciting for you. But that doesn't mean that it's in the public interest. It doesn't mean that the project water is needed by the recipients. And to this date, there still is no signed contract with the recipient to receive this water. This is a pipe dream, pardon the pun, and it's nothing more. The project economics keep rising into close to $8 billion or more. We just have no idea about the impacts, but we have to go spend tens of millions of dollars from federal agencies, from federal taxpayer dollars, for all of these different agencies, not just one or two, but virtually every single one. And the Army Corps of Engineers kicked this project out of its office because, as it cited in its letter, incomplete studies on the part of the project applicant.
Let me have Mr. Million come in. We just have about 3 minutes left. Specifically, Mr. Million, feasibility, I'm guessing you believe this is feasible, and environmental impact.
Tom, this is a surplus of independent analysis on the Bureau of Reclamation, the Department of the Interior, that was a part of the record of decision, as was the environmental community on the green, meeting all the baseline flows and available surpluses, Flaming Gorge and the Green River, move a project. So at the end of the day, it's a surplus water supply, which is the reason the EIS is being done, to either verify the surpluses are there or not. And if the surpluses are not there, this project should not go through. If there are adverse impacts on the Green and Flaming Gorge, I'll be the first to put a stake in it. But the reality is, if there's surpluses there, and the needs of the system, all the needs, endangered species, boating, fly fishing, are being met, an underground pipeline from a 3.8 million acre foot reservoir to meet needs in other water short areas of the region is critical. And frankly, the underlying issue really isn't an issue of Colorado, Wyoming, Utah, New Mexico against each other, because the Upper Basin has always worked as a brotherhood. I fully respect Governor Mead's comments. I'll fully respect what the governor of Utah has to say. But this really is about the fact that the Upper Basin Compact water has been going to the Lower Basin to benefit California, Nevada, and Arizona for almost a century. And it has caused major impacts. That's why the state of Utah is doing the Lake Powell Project. If the Upper Basin decides that it wants to let the Lower Basin continue to benefit that water, then I would support that policy decision. That is an Upper Basin decision. The compact allows for, and actually, frankly, forbids anyone from preventing the Upper Basin states from moving forward on the beneficial development of the compact.
We just have about a minute left. I want to give 30 seconds for a closing statement from Zach Frankel.
Thank you. The bottom line is the water is not there. Mr. Million's trying to hide in the Colorado River Compact as if some reason that Colorado should be granted this water to develop even though it's not needed. And the bottom line is this. As people think about wasteful government spending, as people think about waste in general, this is the kind of project they need to think of. Unnecessary, expensive, and destructive water projects that don't need to exist. The recipients of the water have enough water to live with. Their water use is ample, and there are other supplies, there are demand reductions, there are all manner of highly technological advances that have been made that allow them to have water. The bottom line is, this is about a giveaway of a public resource to a private individual and the investor class to make money. It's not going to benefit the economy. It's going to impact rural economies the hardest.
Let me give 30 seconds, just literally 30 seconds, for a final statement from Mr. Million.
Those that have looked at the project inside and out think it is by far the most environmentally sensitive project out there. It will have major positive potential to help the ag base, to alleviate water short areas both in Wyoming and Colorado. Again, if the surpluses aren't there, if the baseline needs of the system are not met, then this project should be put a stake, have a stake put in it. The reality is that analysis has served the environmental community extremely well, as it should. Scientific research and analysis to help species and the protection of those species. This project should be allowed to move through the process to see whether there's an opportunity to help other regions of the Upper Basin.
Thank you very much. We are out of time. Appreciate very much Fort Collins businessman Aaron Million, who's proposing the WICO Power and Water Project, which would transport water from Flaming Gorge Reservoir to the Denver area. Thanks so much for coming on with us.
Thank you.
And Zach Frankel, Executive Director of Utah Rivers Council. Thanks so much.
Thank you both. I appreciate the debate.
And we hope you'll join us for Science Questions tomorrow with Sherry Quinn. And thanks for listening today.
Utah Public Radio is heard on KUSR HD1, Logan, KUSK HD1, Vernal, KUSL HD1, Richfield, KUST HD1, Moab, and KUSU FM HD1, Logan. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and go to our website at www.upr.org.